entering the DGTC.
Are you ready for a deep dive?
And Jordan did most of the crap.
Can't believe I said that.
I've been doing this in 2008. What the fuck do I know?
Drawing hands is my kryptonite.
Dark loading up elbow logos.
Yeah. Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the DGDC, a united team of design professionals, creatively bound to bring unique inspiration and uncommon perspectives. You can email us listener questions or topic ideas to hello@dgdcpod.com or check out our website, dgdcpod.com. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram or Twitter at dgdcpod. Plus now you can join in on the conversation. We have a Facebook group. Just pop onto our website and hit the community tab at the top. Now, on with the show. All right. Well, we have probably, this is our biggest, Mikkel, would you say this is our longest running DGDC tradition?
It is.
This is.
Do you want to know the exact year?
Ooh, yeah. When was first really? Year?
16.
Wow.
Oh, crap.
16 wow. AD.
Wow. I'm the only talent that you can keep coming back for that many years. You run everybody off.
Bill, you're the only one. You're the only one, man. And we are so glad
it's
to have
fantastic.
You back.
I'm a survivor.
If you haven't figured Thank it you. Out, this is the Logo Trends yeah. 2021 with our buddy Bill Gardner from Gardner Designs and Logo Lounge. What's up, Bill?
Bill. Hey, this is a blast. And I feel honored knowing I'm your, do we have to say oldest? Maybe yeah. season.
Longest standing.
There's got to be some yeah. other adjective we can.
Longest running. Yeah. Okay. Longest yes. running. Multiple we'll returning. We'll what else could we say, right?
yeah. Lots of ovation.
And yeah. it's we were just saying before we got on with you Ooh. How it can't be a year ago. Like that was. In so many ways, when we look back at the last year, it either feels like 100 years or it feels like last month, right? And
yeah.
I mean, like,
yeah.
we just got finished talking yeah. with you, and then I saw your report, and I was like, Bill is back.
And that I think, if I recall right, that was Jordan's first show.
That was, that was my first.
Was it? And yeah. So Jordan, if we cut you in half, could we count the circles and see one?
Just one, one small
just
circle.
One, you're just 1 year old on this thing? Okay.
Yeah. I'm learning to walk, starting to color inside the lines.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, this is, and it's so interesting too, because I remember when we were doing that, we were like, it was a perfect moment to talk and bring Jordan into it because we were talking about branding so much yeah. and particularly your 2020 logo trend at that time. But now we're here and we've survived. We're after that year. And I was so anxious yeah. to talk to you on this and when we can get you back on here. But just reading through your report, this was, tell us a little bit about how different this was from the very beginning after last year.
You know, okay, I may not deliver the answer you're looking for here, but I'm going to take a shot at this because, as you recall, when we got into this last year, it really was. I mean, it was so much closer to the beginning of COVID that everybody was kind of making speculation on, you know, what's this going to do to the industry and where are we going and how's this going to affect us? And here we are, you know, a year later. And for those that don't know, I'm in Kansas, Wichita, Kansas, and you know, kind of the middle of the country. And we were dealing with clients on either coast that were going, oh my God, well, you guys are together in the office? You touch each other?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's one of those things where we're going to, you know, it was a little bit yeah. different here than in some parts of the country. A lot of different regulations and shutdowns and the likes. But, you know, as I kind of look back at it, man, you know, somebody told me that nothing accelerates trends faster than crisis. And
wow.
it was amazing. I mean, if you think about it, things that usually go in 10 steps kind of jumped from step 4 straight to step 8, you know, things that we were doing that all of a sudden, you know, you know, in the first place, Skype entirely missed out on it. Zoom got in on it.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
You know, all of a sudden, you know, yeah. Isn't it really?
Yeah.
And you know, we start taking a look at how it's affected designers, and look how quickly people are kind of looking to freelance talent to come in and help them, you know, within their studio. Because frankly, they've learned to feel comfortable working with their own people, you know, virtually. Isn't that amazing?
And a lot of brand-based, brand identity designers, they work this way anyhow, like a lot of us. And so it wasn't daunting in the regard that it had been for so many. I mean, I kept telling my family, you're in my space, people. This is my deal. This is my day to day.
It was new to, so many people.
Well, I mean, even our own designers, we've got just an exceptional group of talent here. And even during the midst of this, hired Michael Pinda, who's a designer friend of ours from up in Boston, who moved to Wichita to join our studio.
Nice.
And Adam Anderson, who's in Omaha. You know, we've got this tremendous group of people here, you know, Ellen Mosman and Jay Walter and Dustin Youngman, and all of these people are ones that people kind of recognize, and they were starting to bring more and more work in from people saying, hey, so-and-so reached out to me. I'm going, glad to hear it, you know, and these are people that would never have reached out otherwise, but they're just feeling comfortable now.
That's cool.
You feels cool. You had a great line that started off your report that I thought kind of summed up everything.
Oh.
You said this is referring to design studios, freelancers and everything. Either their phones were ringing off the hook or they were quiet ringing entirely. Like, we all heard that. And I think we all went through days of like ghost town and then all of a sudden this like resurgence. And what did you hear over your, I'm sure you're in touch with a lot of these design firms and people that submit the logos to it and everything. What was your take on why some did really great and why others had a little bit of a trouble?
Yeah. A lot of it had to do with how much work people had in the funnel before this kind of happened to them. And especially if you've got long-term work or if you have contracts and the likes with specific clients, those were the people that kind of had something to rest on. They knew that they had dollars coming in and they weren't going to have to shut down. There were a lot of people that got into the PPP or PPE dollars that kind of came through that allowed them to kind of help fund in that way. But honestly, I think my comment was that I would either talk to people and go, guys, my business is just busting out. I don't have the capability to turn everything that's coming my door.
Yeah.
And I've got other people I'm talking to that are going, guys, send me some because I have had nothing coming through my door. The number of people that I've talked to that have said, no, it's just been pretty much the way it typically was has been nil. I mean, it's either one end or the other. It's feast or famine. Yeah. It was just crazy.
Yeah. And I think we all experienced that and heard from other folks that were in the same thing too. And I like your point of saying like, it was what was in your pipeline. What did you have already? And maybe it goes to show we should be thinking about that a little bit more throughout the, you know, to future-proof us down the road. Like, are we? But these single entrepreneur designers, I think were poised to be in a great position because didn't you guys all find too, a lot of bigger agencies had to lay off and then maybe even companies did. So the first person they'll reach out to is an independent contractor under those times.
So I'll attribute two things in there. One is you're absolutely right. I think that there were a lot of people that had given consideration to, you know, would be, you know, can I go out on my own? Should I, you know, and that decision, I mean, back to that crisis mode, you know, that jump from 4 to 8 happened, you know, all of a sudden, you know, somebody's unemployed or all of a sudden they're in a situation where they're going, God, I could be working for somebody else. And it just happened. So, but that's not just designers. I mean, if you start thinking about it, it's people that were employed in other industries that were potential entrepreneurs that really had never had that push they needed in order to make that decision. And that was the push they needed. And you're starting to see so many more businesses bubbling up, you know, during this period of time.
Yeah.
Some out of need and some out of just desire.
Right. It's just a testament to people seeking opportunity out of disadvantage that, you know, inevitably takes place in our lives. There's a different way to approach that after time. I mean,
Yeah.
Well, it's like what you said, crisis forms opportunity.
Accelerates.
And it was neat. I think I saw three or four folks who were always thinking of this going out on their own and doing something independent or even side hustling in addition to their job.
Boy, did
everybody take advantage of that last year.
Think about all the people that have side hustles now.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, I mean, even that phrase didn't exist, you know, 5 years ago. It's one of those things that when you start to take a look at it now, people had those kind of bootstrap ready-made areas that they could dive over to and invest their time in and make some money themselves. So, it's a brave new and different world, isn't it? I'll tell you the other thing that I think that kind of goes hand in hand with that is that during that period of time, amongst those clients that you have, and you guys could probably attest to this, there are those that were scared shitless that sat on the sidelines. And there were others that had courage and were brave and realized that, you know, there's a bunch of folks sitting down on the curb. I'm going to sprint like hell. Mm-hmm. And that just really ran with it. And fortunately, we had a bunch of really courageous clients. And sometimes you need to nudge them. But, you know, I mean, it's a perfect opportunity for people to start moving ahead with their own efforts.
Yeah. Follow the lead, right?
Totally. Yeah. And I think that's sort of where I landed, where like I had a couple clients where just playing it safe. Right. And I get it. Cause like we were in a state of just complete unknown and, you know, it's so small businesses. I work a lot with small businesses. So it's a precious thing. Like if they go under, it's not just their business goes under. Sometimes it's much more than that. But I will say the clients that like really put it all on the line, took some risks, the reward was great. Mm-hmm. I mean, like early to market, I do a lot in the beer world. And so like people who are early to market beer deliveries, like I helped a client put on like a whole drive-through beer festival, like all these fun things was tremendous. Like the success from those risks to put stuff out there was, I think the return is great, right? And
So Jordan, was the spirit industry just going bonkers during this period of time?
The spirit industry was tough, right? Because like, at least in Oregon too, like it's only liquor stores where you can get it. You can't go into like your grocery store, your Safeway, your Kroger and just get liquor. And they didn't have packaging. No one packages it other than the bottles and liquor stores. Yeah. So you couldn't go to a bar, but Oregon did pass near the end of COVID, or not the end of COVID, but near the end of lockdown, like they allowed to go cocktails. So that changed a lot. But for sure, in those first few months, the few like spirit companies I was helping out were pretty terrified.
Yeah.
Just because they had no outlet. Yeah. I mean, it's such a small impact.
There is a theory that I always kind of come back to called Overton's window, that it basically is the premise of you give a person an inch, they're going to take three. And it's that, you know, you've got that child that they've got a 10 o'clock curfew and they are always supposed to go to bed at 10 o'clock and they come to you and they say, hey, we're going to get together with some friends and we're all going to stay out till 1 o'clock. And you're going, no, you're not. And after some negotiation, you finally decide, okay, well, they can stay out until 11.
Yeah.
Suddenly 11 is their new 10. You know, I mean, you just keep, it's that window that just keeps getting opened a little bit wider and a little bit wider. And I think with industries, when you were just talking about, you know, states going to allowing drink, you know, cocktails to go and the likes, you know, you're never going to close that window back down once you've kind of opened that window up, have you? You know, and it's the same thing in design, you know?
Yeah, case in point, Oregon just solidified that law. So now they can do it now indefinitely. Like it's just they allow to go cocktails in all bars. They're keeping it because you know, you get to the point where like, what is this legislation helping in the long scheme? Like it's not, it's just kind of antiquated ideas. There's a lot of new growth opportunity there. Like, well, what does to go cocktails mean? Like, man, talk about packaging opportunities as designers who do, he does a lot in packaging. Like that's exciting. That's a whole new venture that we haven't been able to do.
Now, if you're doing any packaging in Louisiana, and hopefully you've got listeners there, I've learned from Baton Rouge that they've got drive-through cocktails to go, except that they serve them to you in a cup with a straw in it, but they have to leave that 1 inch of paper cap on the straw.
Yes.
So it's a closed container.
It's sanitary.
Yeah, that'll keep people.
Yeah. Well, no, it's kind of, it's closed.
It's impossible.
As long as you keep
drink
that
it.
Little 1 inch of paper on top of that straw. You know, I'm kind of like going, there's some marketing opportunity, that 1 inch of straw.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Some people just got it all figured out.
Pronto, right?
That's right.
Yep. Yep. It may be a new trend. We don't know. Yeah, exactly.
Well, stay tuned next year, right? What? Yeah. Speaking of all these industries, you found you found a lot of industries that did flourish, you know, basically because of what you were probably seeing in the logos, right? Like,
what? I think some of them were.
Oh,
were,
you had a few. So you had mentioned the pets, plants, cleaning, delivery. Yeah. When you think of all these things that are like cooking, online things, like you saw the results in it because of what was submitted as a logo.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah.
I'll tell you one little odd industry that really has popped up, and maybe you guys have run across this, but it was novel to me. Was I've got a nephew who works for Google and a niece that works for another conglomerate out in San Francisco that moved back to Kansas because everybody's working at a distance. But these companies are spending millions of dollars on things, activities to send to them that they can all Zoom together to, you know, all come together to bottle wine.
Candle
all
making.
Come together to make sushi, or all come together to paint a picture or whatever. And these are the industries that are thriving, are the ones that are coming up with these connective activities that people can join together on because they've kind of, you know, drifted apart geographically. Doesn't mean that they have to be apart geographically when it comes to activity. Yeah. So, you know, new industry everywhere.
And isn't that, that has legs, because then like in the future, I mean, there's just family members that live in different states can now take advantage of these things and do those activities because we're now so rooted in this world. I mean, you know, we've always done it through Skype and everything when we've talked to you in the past too. And you you did mention how Zoom and video calls have made kind of a big difference. They have, there's a lot of pros and cons. Let's face it. Like, there's a lot of cons too. It's getting a lot of screen time, but you know.
Well, okay, but let's
be honest.
Let's be honest. I have had more personal conversations with people that I hadn't talked to for years, and I looked them in the face, and we were just face to face in a Zoom call. But it was, I learned more from clients that, you know, wanted to share stories with me personal. And, you know, I probably have built stronger connections during this period of time than any other.
That's well said, right? Because, like, especially it felt, you know, during those, like, really rough periods, you know, you're in the trenches with your client, right? Like, there's a massive solve that you guys are trying to solve together. And so like inevitably that connection grows stronger. And I think the level of trust with my clients has grown exponentially. Like I think because we've gone through something, you know, it touched everyone. And,
well, Jordan, I hate to tell you this. I've actually talked to some of your clients and it hasn't. It may appear that way, but I'm just saying, man,
whole other story on the other end. Right?
You're living in a dream somewhere, man. No, I'm positive that's the case.
Yeah.
No.
Right.
I think it's a case for all of us, isn't it?
Totally. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah. Because even new clients almost automatically go to the Zoom rather than a what used to be a phone call or just email. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think,
good point.
The pro I've seen is that we start here where it maybe never even was part of the equation a year or two ago with a new client.
Sure.
So I do like this part of it. I think it helps us sell better. It helps us tell the story that we want to help them out with and everything. But I think there, you know, as well, there are the cons too. It gets to be very draining. It gets to be, you know, there's a lot of more screen time. And, but also too, like it could linger a little bit. Let's be honest, right?
I'm also getting really tired of looking at floating fake backgrounds behind people. So I appreciate the fact that, and those people that are listening to this don't realize that we're all looking at each other's houses right now. And, you know, I've got dirty laundry hanging behind. No,
that's kind of hard, though. It allows you to enter people's homes in a manner that hadn't existed before. I mean, whether people have been modest about that and want it to be controlled or not, there's a little bit more of that dipping into people's lives. And if children are coming in and interrupting, it's okay because it's happening everywhere. You know, it's a little bit more well respected, and it had been before, but it's like welcomed. It's interesting.
Mikhail, I've tried a couple of times where I've been on a call and encouraged people to turn the camera around 180 degrees the other way, and it's kind of no, yeah, I'm exactly. fine.
You know, you don't want to know what's going on over there.
They've got this cone. They've got this cone of good shit.
Yep. Yeah, there's a lot of strategy here. Happening.
They curated this visual here. Yeah. It's not
the cone of good shit. Totally. That's the best, and we all have it because like past these parameters, you don't want to know, right? Yep. I love it.
No.
Before we get into the trends a little bit, and just so you guys know too as well, you can go to logolounge.com, hit their articles.
Please do.
Yes. Yeah. And
we'll have a link.
I'm sure they've already have it because let's face it, it's kind of like a mainstay for all of us to use and kind of learn from. But one thing I love that you said, Bill, was you said people in branding are hired to tell stories and create meaning. And I think more than ever after last year, did you see maybe a spike in like a new sense of some creativity, or as much as you identify trends very well, did you see an uprising in more like, what's the word? I guess storytelling in logos and branding was, what'd you see? You know, I'm just curious.
It's interesting you bring that up because I did mention that in there. And I think that, here was my take on this, is that I think that during this period of time that because it was a crisis there, it, I think, opened up the empathy orifice on all of us.
Ooh,
we were able to be a little bit more empathetic with others, and we are opening to hearing stories, and we were starting to listen, I think, to each other more. And when you're willing to listen, then it's easier to share a story, isn't it? Mm. And I think that, story is one of those ways it connects all of us. And, it ends up ultimately finding little parcels of things that are special to everybody and kind of brings them together in such a way that you can relate to it. And maybe it's just the, empathetic aspect of this period of time, because we were all kind of going through the very same thing. It wasn't sympathy, mm-hmm. because sympathy is, I don't have any problems going on here. It's your part of the world.
Yeah, we're all in the hole together.
The same thing. So, yeah. So
that's a great point. Like the
feelings
are back and right. Yeah. And it's like,
it's true.
And these little, I thought, logos and branding, particularly, let's just face it, what was it, about 10 years ago when the minimal vibe was so strong, right? And it was this mm-hmm. pullback of personality and everything. And what we've seen in that pendulum swing over the last 5 years is personality mm-hmm. coming back. And this collection is a perfect example of that. Do you think that pendulum swing was faster than ever last year? Was that... what do you think? Because I've always wondered about the timing of that. And that pendulum swing is what, we go from, minimal, vanilla, whatever, and then we get sick of that and we swing back to the other and we get more character and whatever.
Yeah, and you're speaking my language, you know that, because I like to talk about the pendulum mm-hmm. And, how trends seem to be much like that. But I think if you went back to the broadcast we did 1 year ago and we were speculating on what was going to happen, I think I was imagining that there were going to be broader strokes and things that were more visible than they ultimately turned out to be. We've all got to keep in mind that the thing that bears on us most is what's happening today. How quickly we forget, what happened a month ago or a year ago, mm-hmm. frankly, and when, we're all kind of living in the moment, it's cold outside, so global cooling is going on, or it's warm outside, so global warming is going on today. It's not a daily thing. And when you look at branding, we all know this because all of us are involved in this, all of us. And, it is that long-term play. Mm-hmm. It's not a short-term play. And I think especially within, some of the most visible branding is rebranding. It's, folks that go in for retooling to build resonance with people to become relevant again. And that that isn't something that you want to take lightly. And you're usually dealing with smart enough people that it may have gone into a process or the beginnings of it, you know, or pre-production before COVID hit. And it may also be something that, you know, they're kind of going, you know, we're all feeling like this is here to stay, but it's not. We know that, you know, it's going to go away. And a year from now, we're all going to be kind of looking at it going, do you remember that Zoom thing that we used to do when we were, you know,
and it's true.
You know, so keep in mind, you know, the snapshots in time are a really bad way to look at branding.
You know, branding is,
again, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint.
Yeah. But even like design trends, like this pendulum, like it's a slow swing or there's just multiple pendulums or think of it like a clock where
there
like
are.
You have your second hand and that might like look at year to year. And then you have your minute hand, which
Jordan's
might look
right.
like decades. And then the hour hand is like, man, RGB is not even that old. So the fact that we can do gradients is like a new phenomenon in the world of like art. So that pendulum, it's like, you know, it's good to kind of take those breakpoints and like really check in like, what does design trends mean? Because the short term also, each one tells you different things, you know?
Yep.
I tend to imagine
a room with a whole, you know, it's kind of like cats in a room full of rockers. It's, you know, I imagine a whole bunch of pendulums swinging back and forth. You know, here's one for, you know, Spartan to overly curvy. Yeah. Here's one straight color to, you know, and you're kind of, you know, dodging these pendulums as they're kind of swinging through. And some of them are just moving really slow and then they speed up just as you get to them and you start to go, shit, you know, I got to catch up with that, you know. So the whole pendulums thing, I have nightmares about that, Jordan. Don't bring it up.
You're blowing my mind with the multiple pendulums now, because it's exactly right. Like it has, and they're all on different paces and different timing and different levels.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and measuring different things. You know, again, it's just like,
you know, we've got listeners out there that are going, "What the hell? Oh, talking about?" But I just have.
I think it's the best thing to consider, because we just did an episode last week on rebranding, and we started with Michael Bayrou's thing about, you know, it's a swimming competition, not a diving competition.
Yeah.
And also too, but I remember when the pendulum swing thing was presented to me the first time by this trends group that came and talked to a company I was working at. And it blew our mind, because we never, ever, until you hear it that way, you don't see it. And you can look at I think you might have shown like the Olive Garden logo was the perfect example when they rebranded. They went from stone and chiseled and gradients and texture and drop shadows and highlights to this vector.
Yep.
And everyone just said, this is trash. And that's when minimal was going. But then the idea of the pendulum swing makes so much sense. It's like, well, we're more digital now. We have an app. We have to stand out. We have salad dressing bottles. Like, so all of a sudden it works, right?
Yeah, an application like that changes, industry application changes, where like, digital you can get away with a lot, but if you grow to that size, like, well, how are you going to print that on your aprons? Or like, how are people going to put that on menus? You know, like, I think eventually it comes a scale of business, and then obviously, like, the more touch points you have, the more versatile your logo needs to be, the more applicable. And you can't do that with some of those old illustrations. You just can't do it. Yeah. So either you have a couple variations
think,
or...
I think we've gotten to that point where I have fewer and fewer clients that go, you know... Yeah. When I fax that to somebody, I'm going, I'm sorry, we don't do fax here.
Yeah,
I know.
Oh, you don't get faxes there. Where is there? And I go, in the year 2000 plus. we don't get faxes there. Really? We don't need to make it register, and you know, there you go.
That's crazy. Well, where do you want to start? What do you think is the perfect one? We've all got the report in front of us. Where do you want to start?
You know what? I'm just, because I was having this conversation with a few of our team here before I got on, and I'm going to share just a little bit of quick information. So go. All of this is on logolounge.com. Jay Walter, our director of digital here, just retooled the entire trend section of Logo Lounge. And if you log on there, it is just a blast to go through since 2003, every trend. And he's really thought this through. So it's very intuitive the way that you kind of travel through this. And I always tell people it's more important to know how you got there than it is to know where you are. So you can see the trajectory when you look at these trends and you can kind of see how they're evolving so that you can guess where they're going to be tomorrow. And, you know, I've got to say, Nick, you are always so wonderful at kind of saying, you know, Bill always lets us know that he's just reporting. This is called your report. It doesn't mean that I like this shit. It doesn't mean that, you know, I mean, some of it I love. I really do.
Oh, sure.
Some of it I'm suspect of, you know, but I'm telling you what I'm seeing out there. And it's not just what I'm seeing out there, but also keep in mind that Logo Lounge, you know, with 350,000 logos, has a lot of data analytics of what people are looking at and what people are submitting and the keywords that they're putting in there. So when somebody goes, oh, that's just Bill's opinion. It's not just my opinion. Oh, guys, I'm pulling this out because we've got the data that says, here's what's happening right now. And this is how, you know, we've got to kind of look at this. And, so we were talking about electric tape and it, you know,
it's my favorite. It's just,
oh, is it really? I you know, and this is, there's a few of these that kind of have gone so retro, they kind of step backwards into, you know, I don't care if I do put the name of my business on that sign out front using duct tape. I'm going to do it. You know, it's it's not advised. Mm-hmm. As designers, we're not condoning that. But I'm just telling you that this is a little bit of my thumb, my nose at the man, you know, bad kid market. And I love that the logo that was done for the Czech Skateboard Association, which if you're familiar with Czechoslovakia's flag, they've got a lion that has two tails. That's an entirely different story. But they've got a lion on a longboard that's a street marauder, and they have basically crafted it out of black electrical tape so that where you would typically see these little straight little rectangular boxes overlap each other, they weren't concerned about whether or not they exactly lined up. There was some little crossover, so on and so forth in there, you know. So it's kind of like, you know, I'm just laying this stuff down, man, and I'm going to show it to you. And it's beautifully done. I love the logo.
It is. You know, it's beautifully imperfect. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, it's just like, how do you solve for no curves? No curves are allowed in this, like, sort of.
No curves.
No curves allowed.
And they did it. You know, this is what a skate. This is how a skateboarder would, you know, mark their board is, you know, with a roll of electric tape. Yeah. So I'm pounding
so
around the internet last night.
It is. Yeah. I like that.
I'm pounding around the internet last night looking for some reference on this. And I think I was looking up black tape type. And I noticed that not only are there some fonts out there that, you know, are made with electric tape or black tape, but there was a black tape project in 2019. I was going, what the hell is that? And it was a bunch of fashion designers that were making bikinis and fashion garments on women in Los Angeles done entirely with black tape. And I was going, you know, I don't know that that was the impetus for this. but I'm just saying there was, you know, this black tape project, and maybe it led into this. I couldn't say.
Every year there's one logo to me that, like, it becomes not only my favorite, but it's the one, it's so good because you can't even be inspired by it because you'll look like you're copying it. And it was, for me, it was the filthy one. That one to me is one of my favorites, that alone, regardless of the trend and it making your cut. But to, you know what I mean? It just has that vibe and that something about it,
it's
that
just,
I've never
just enough grunge enough.
Yeah. It's that I forget what that rule is, but it's like a combination of familiar and a combination of surprise, right? It's like, that's that epic marketing formula that will work every time.
Yeah.
And there's
super
just something,
it all comes together.
There's just something about the, I love the way that the F is almost reverse italic, and then the Y and everything starts to go maybe a little bit italic. But do you know what I mean? It's like no rules. I think you sum it up by saying it has that DIY vibe. And that being so relevant to people at home right now, does this really, if this is what you're trying to say, raw, kind of against the grain, outside of the lines, boom, you have it.
For those that haven't seen it or haven't gone to take a look at, these are not corporate marks. You know, even though it could be argued that PBC Chick is but you know, from it really is the kind of situation where all of these are trying to spite the system, if you will. In there, that, you know, it's the look, and it befits them. You wouldn't want to stick it on a lot of businesses.
I laughed so hard when I saw the name, because you always get us with two or three really good new names of these buckets, and you know, because I've always loved that filthy one, but when I saw the Czech skateboarding one, I was like, there's a way it could actually work in something a little more sophisticated, right? It's kind of a compromising kind of vibe. I mean, it works in a few different ways. Yeah. You know,
nope,
it's really cool.
I love it for that reason.
All right, guys, it's time to give a little love to the sponsor of this episode, Skillshare. You guys know Skillshare. We talk about it all the time. There are so many fantastic, great things to take advantage of at Skillshare to better yourself, better your career, or just find new creative things to do and master. You can basically witness all of this transformation right before your eyes, because these are all project-based Skillshare classes. You can make a giant leap in your career with just taking some of the small steps, and Skillshare is how you make that possible. It's an online community, offers tons of great memberships. These memberships are very unique because the meaning behind it means you are improving yourself and getting better. You can explore tons of really great actual projects, and these are projects you can use, show off on Instagram, put them into your portfolio, whatever you need to do to show your new skill off. It empowers you to accomplish real growth. And this time, we're going to basically highlight one of my favorites. This is from a buddy of mine. His name is Michael Fugusu. And Michael has a fantastic new course called Digital Illustration Techniques, creating this paper pop-up style. What's great about this is, as specific as it is, it's also a fantastic process of learning how Michael puts together his work in Illustrator, takes it into Photoshop, and creates this incredible depth and lighting and all this great texture to create something really new. So even if you're just looking to sharpen up all of your digital skills, what he runs you through is a fantastic exercise to get better and better. So when you take a look at this, he's going to show you how you start with sketching and rendering all of your illustrations into Adobe Illustrator. He's going to help you set up all the right lighting effects to make sure everything pops and it has a particular style. Then he adds these really cool paper textures into the layers. And what this does is it creates this incredible depth and volume, making a 3D look. He is such a great person to kind of sit with and learn from. He's a really funny guy. I think you'll totally, totally love this course. So if you want to check this course out by Michael, here's what you're going to do. Get into there, take a look at our offer. Skillshare will give you tons of great practice to make that progress get better. You will advance toward any goal you want to do, and you'll achieve it through these short lessons and hands-on projects. It's on demand. You basically can log on, learn what you want, pause it, go right back to it whenever you need. Do something really cool today that's going to help you for tomorrow. It's designing for real life, and Skillshare offers incredible affordability. Basically, it's about $10 a month with their annual subscription. But you don't even need to do that to take advantage of Michael's course. What you need to do, if you want to explore any of the creativity Skillshare has to offer, go to skillshare.com/deepend2 and get a free trial of the premium membership. That's a free trial. You can have unlimited, go through everything and take a look at it. That's skillshare.com/deepend2. Get on board, check out what Michael has got to offer, and we hope to see you there again soon.
You guys pick one.
Dude, Off Jog is one I see. It's so prominent right now. I like that you gave a name to it, because like I see it everywhere. And it's only been maybe in the last couple months where I'm seeing it a lot more. But
which one was it, Jordan?
Off Jog.
Off Jog, totally.
And that Brex one.
You know, and so that was one of those where, as I Yeah. And I think your listeners probably know this from having described this before, but when I do this, I literally go through every logo that's been submitted since the last report. And this year that was close to around 25, 30,000 logos. And as I do that, I pull off all the logos that have, you know, some aspect of something that's a nuance I haven't seen before. Mm-hmm. And this year I ended up with about 1,900 of them that I go through this match game where I pull one out and I go, I know I've seen some more of these, and I, you know, collect them into a gathered cluster. And that off jog is one where I was just surprised how many of those were in there. And there's a couple of iterations. One is like you've taken a ribbon and, you know, that's perfectly straight, and then you've kind of folded it and dropped it down a level so that you, mm-hmm. you know, this ribbon mm-hmm. kind of folds and then comes back into itself. Mm-hmm. And as you look at those, sometimes there's that little curved line that goes into it. Sometimes you'll see a picture of like the American flag where you see the stripes coming along and then they kind of curve down thinly, but they're still connected. There's that sinew in there that connects them to the next group of lines kind of coming out. So a lot of these, there is no sinew. There's no connecting tissue between them. Yeah. It's just, you know, we come down to a point and we're going to match up with the other point. And to me, the thing that I think is really brilliant about these is that they, the part about that logo that's intriguing isn't the line coming in or the line mm-hmm. going out. The part that's intriguing is that little juncture that happens right there where it flips from one to the other. Mm. And it's significant because it identifies that there is a change. Yeah. There's one in there that is, bank tracked, or I the name's failing me at the moment, for a bank, but it was a family shift, you know, it was from one to another. And, you know, I mean, here's this little jog. There's another one in there which identifies for a surf company.
There's another one there that
identifies. Yep.
Jay Fletcher, yep. Right.
The, which is, there's one very, there with
eyes back.
Very much the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's one that is actually for a surf company, and it happens to be the point break that they are identifying. So for a surfer, there is that point break that is essential to them because that's where you're going to pick up the very best waves. All of these, that little flip over in there is that key thing in that business. It's a change point, and that's all it's indicating is here's where the change happens.
Yeah, that's cool.
And that's the number one thing I get on every brief is like, what do you want the logo to say? And it's always change, right? Like, or shift or something. And so like, but I love that Brex one to me. There's just something about it that it's almost moving.
Yep.
It's like a flag the other ones,
the other ones zoom in very closely on that.
Very tight.
Where you said that junction is. And there's something about the Brex one that blurs because it's of its scale. And to me, it's almost moving. It's almost fluid too. Like there's this, it's a fluid kind of adaptable logo to me.
One of the things that you may or may not realize is that when I pull these clusters together, I may have 20 different logos to pick from. Mm. And I've got to kind of find ones that show the diversity of its use in there so that they aren't all the same. And that Brex is one that has that little connecting tissue in there. But I love it because it's so fluid. And when you look at it, I mean, what is it? It literally is a rectangle.
Yeah.
You know, which is as rectilinear as you could possibly be, except you have this wonderful kind of curvaceous, smooth flowing perfect line in there.
Yeah.
And it's just really gorgeous.
Yeah. Interesting. What about the number 9? This is the, is it Janus?
Oh, Janice?
Janice. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Well, let's talk about that.
Because this one's I've been seeing this and I didn't even know how to, call it anything.
Sort of like an evolution from last year's variable type, right? Like it's.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so here's what's going on with it. And the reason it's called Janus is Janus was the Roman god of change and Beginnings. And ooh. So if you have seen an individual that has a face on the front and a face on the back, that was the Roman god Janus, because they were, could both look forward and look backwards at the very same time. So it's a pun on the fact that it's two faces. And that's where the name came from, now that you know.
I'm just dying for a client to tell me, I want my logo to be two-faced. That's it.
Yeah. I want a two-faced logo or a double.
What kind of two-faced company we really want to relate to?
I know exactly.
But so here's what I love about this particular one is that when variable fonts started coming out, you know, okay, just to describe for anybody who doesn't, you know, hasn't caught up with this, you know, millennium, a variable font is any font that you can sit there and quickly shift through any weight or extension or condensation very easily, the same font. And you can pick any point along that XYZ axis that you want to with that. But what's happened is when variable fonts came out, one of the things that people used to demonstrate it was they would show you an animation of, well, look, here it is fat and here it is thin and here it is extended and here it is, you know, and that was what people loved. Now, the real reason for a variable font was so that somebody could say, I want it just that thick, and then they could set their name in that thickness of type. It wasn't to show it, you know, it coming up and down in scale.
Yeah.
But because we as designers were so enamored with this idea of this variable, you know, aspect of the animation, we're going, oh, shit, that's where the magic is, you know. So designers started really glomming on to that animation aspect of it. Well, this year, what we're starting to see is there are more and more programs that don't just take a sans serif Futura and run it through its, you know, gamuts, but they're actually taking dramatically different fonts. They may take a Futura and an Egyptine, you know, a slab serif, and they're able to swing them, you know, on an XYZ axis from one to the other very smoothly. And you're kind of going, God, that's magic. How are they doing that? Mm. So you start to see some of these logos where it starts out as a serif and it transitions to a sans serif. A lot of these really are active in animation when you go to their website or when, you know, you have an opportunity to see them in live action. Canal Brazil.
Ugh.
Yeah, you know, if you go out and check out Armin's Brand New, go there and type in Canal Brazil, because there's a lot of great examples on there. And by the way, Under Consideration and Brand New and Armin are, you know, just dynamite individuals, and love to work with them. But they've got a lot of these examples on their site if you're looking for seeing it in motion, or we've got them on our own trends.
It's so great the way that is this. I remember being the first time seeing these of maybe 2 or 3 years ago. It was so different and unique that I kind of looked at it and said, I don't think it's going to work, because it's so different at its first, like when your first opinion might be like, no, that goes against everything we've learned.
Yeah.
Right. But now I'm looking at it and I'm like, I appreciate it so much, because it might just work perfectly, because my brain has to have the fixed logo that is your hero, right? Like, decide on it, and it has to have it. But when you look at that Canal Brazil one, and even in all of its arrangements and all of its differences, it still feels unified.
Well, and it's speaking to what their product
exactly. is. Exactly. That's more important.
Basically, it's a provider of film and network premium programming in Brazil, and they've got this massive diversity of programs. So, you know, let's show off the massive diversity of what they've got going on. Here is the secret, I think, to if you want to be a trend forecaster in the design field, go look at the new tools. Whatever the newest tool is that's coming out, because designers, we go through a learning curve ourselves. So the first thing that we do is we take a tool and use it in its most novel, naive fashion possible. We don't give it a lot of thought, which is why when you first started seeing variable font logos, it was just them moving from fat to thin to fat to thin. But Once you really learn that tool, then you start to find a way to integrate that with other aspects and to really make it more mature. And, you know, George Bachwan, I may have shared this idea with you before, was the one that shared, matter of fact, I did last year, but I'm going to share it again, which he's the one that shared with me the idea of, you know, as designers, we all tend to set our hooks when we go, you know, fishing at about the same level and we're all catching the fish that are on the top. And he's the one that said, you know, you got to dive down deeper and get to the bottom because that's where you're going to see the stuff that nobody else has seen. And the quicker you dive through all that stuff and get to the bottom. So it's the same way with tools. You know, we start out fishing at the same level with those tools, but when we really learn a tool, then we can start to take that into places that everybody else isn't going, and we can start to build a, you know, a solution that people haven't seen before, because it's a great tool, but
totally
take it beyond, you know, the surface.
Yeah, and even compounded by like becoming these tools becoming more accessible to a mass audience, where like font design was not really that accessible 5-10 years ago to everyone. Like, those programs are really expensive, and now there's just a million different alternatives that everyone can make a font. And now you have this sort of variable font direction where like that's easier to get implemented, not only in Adobe but also to create for. You having like all these sort of techniques and tools helping you create and use. So it works so well in tandem, which is exciting.
Completely agree with you.
Okay, I'm going to start making a list of whatever new tool I started using the other day. Because you're right. Like, it's so true. I mean, and I love that you've given a name and a little bit of a spotlight on this, because I literally collected a bunch of stuff that looked like this that wasn't even moving, but it was just static images of like, what is this new trend happening? And I was like, I might have to even bring this up to Bill. But of course, Bill knew of it already. So you named it and you had it in your report. So I love it, Matt.
Sorry about that. I'm gonna jump to asterisks real quick.
Go.
Just because asterisks are one of those things that every year we see an icon, a symbol that seems to just proliferate. You know, it's everywhere. And I think last year was lightning bolts that were everywhere, or little four-pointed twinkling stars, or, you know, over the years, every year there's some element that kind of rises to the surface. This year, guys, we have just seen more asterisks, five-pointed and six-pointed and eight-pointed asterisks than I can fathom. And and I'm going, you know why? And sometimes they're used as the main star. Uh-huh. And I mean, literally, asterisk means little star. But I mean, sometimes it's the main star of the logo, and that's what it is. And you can go back to, is it the Walmart logo, or is it the old, you know, FedEx, Kinko's logo, or something like that? Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of, you know, asterisk logos. It's not new to use an asterisk as a logo, but using an asterisk, you know, as part of that logo, and maybe it's that little magical kind of accent that occurs in conjunction with it. But the thing that just caught me completely off guard is, as I'm gathering these, I'm going, well, there's all these asterisks, and this shows just how damn naive I am, that seem to be a little bit off center, and I can't figure out why that is, that they're you know, and I finally figured out they're all for cannabis. CBD pot, you know, it basically, if you grab that convergence point and just pull it down on the vertical, just a little further than you should.
Yeah, for sure.
All of a sudden, it's the shape of, you know, cannabis. And but it is such a corporate looking symbolic symbol, the way that it is being used. You know, you expect it to be one of the keys on your keyboard that, yeah, okay, and a asterisk and a grastrick, you know, it's one of those things where you're kind of going, I didn't know this was a symbol.
Yeah.
It's a symbol.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah. I like that you even said that there's a natural instinct for the viewer, not just creatives, but anyone that knows the language, that's a tip to scan down to a qualifying footnote. Like, love, right? Like, and it's so true. Like, there is like, you had that one where I think semicolons or dot, dot, dot was a trend. Like, you saw a lot of logos that ended with that.
Ellipses.
And I loved that one. It really was a memory burn for me, because it was like, your logo, it means that's just the beginning of
something
the conversation.
Else.
There's something else happening. And I think the asterisk has that, particularly like, look at Walmart, the way they use it, right? I think it's slightly higher base. So yep. it feels like where the asterisk would go. And I think it works for on so many different levels for you to think more of that company.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I literally remember being in New York with Connie Birdsong at Lippincott, visiting them when they were developing that Walmart asterisk. Asterisk, and I was kind of looking at it going, it's basically an asterisk, isn't it? You sure that's going to work? <You're> like, they did okay with it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, think of what I'd love to ask people what they think that means, particularly for the Walmart logo, right? I think it's really mm-hmm. got, I think you'd get every answer in the book, and I think that's why it's such a, the logo has its own personality to its own, to the its own viewer.
Yeah. It also kind of brings in the rods trend, right? Because like, they're not perfectly
exactly.
simple, so they kind of funnel into a point.
You know, I'm putting together right now, and I'm not sure what date this airs on. So this may be, okay, I'm breaking it, people. We're probably not broadcasting live right now, are we? This is going to broadcast at a future date.
The three of us.
The illusion is gone, Bill.
Ah, crap, I just broke through the fourth wall. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done that. We're actually doing a month of June, the 9th, the 16th, and the 23rd. We are doing 1 hour series of webinars with How Design for How Design Life. And we're going to be doing visually this report on the 9th, which is this coming Wednesday. But it, you know, again, this it'll be hindsight to this program probably. but on the on the 16th, we've got Brooke Robinson from Good Type and Jonathan Rudolph from Logo Inspiration and Fabian Barral from Mr. Cup, and talking about trends in design in general. And then on the 23rd, we're going to be having Jay Fletcher and from the U.S. and Jaron Van Erden from the Netherlands, and Taco Chubabka from Georgia, Tbilisi, Georgia, joining us talking about logo trends. So we, you know, I've been so wrapped up in talking about all of these trends with all of these wonderful people that have other ideas that I don't have, that, you know, it's just making a rush to me. And we were talking about rods, which frankly looks like imagine taking a stick, a pole, if you will, a round pole that has a rounded tip. And if you aim it towards somebody, obviously the area it's foreshortened, and the area that's closest to you is going to appear larger, and the area that's furthest away from you is going to appear smaller. But you you put these into an array and fan them out, and suddenly it looks like you've just dumped into hyperdrive in Star Wars. And I was amazed to find out that there were some younger people that actually knew what that was. So I was kind of going, okay, these logos look just like Star Wars with it. But when you look at them, it almost is an extended drop that's going on. It gives this level of dimension that kind of fans out. A lot of times they're in somewhat of a vortex shape that kind of draw you down into them. It is, they're all very positive. You would almost guess that most of them are a burst that is coming out from a center nucleus. And you're kind of questioning, well, why is that? And is it because it's a company that's reaching out to people? Is it because a company has found a quicker way to get something to you speed-wise? Is it because it looks like the letter D and that happens to be the initial of the company? You know, I mean, there's a lot of reasons for why, you know, people are doing this, but it is a element of design that we just hadn't really seen much of. And all of a sudden this year we're seeing, you know, all these people are building things out of these little rods.
Yeah.
It adds some dimension, you know, like versus if they were just straight lines, like, okay, but having that little sort of perspective dimension just adds that next, like, you know, visual interest immediately. Mm-hmm. Which is a simple,
and it's the fact that it's rounded off on the end. I love to tell people that, and I bet everyone of you's had this happen to you, where you had a client that's come in and you've shown them a star in some fashion, and they may have even asked for a star, and they look at it and they go, you know, I like that, but it's pointy.
Yeah.
Well, it's a star. You know, it's...
it comes to a point. You
know, those things come to a point, you know.
Multiple times.
Yeah, but they're so pointy, you know. And but the human cortex is set up. I mean, we as human beings, you know, from our evolution are designed to stay away from thorns or to stay away from fangs or to stay away from broken things that might hurt us, you know, sharp things. So we feel odd about that. So what do? As designers, we round them off. You know, a few years back we did tumbled, you know, where you start to round things out a little bit. So if you look at those rods, what we've really done is you basically have all these points coming out that had just been rounded off, you know, so that people feel more comfortable with it. Yeah. We're not scaring them off. It's not so pointy.
The DB Workplay one is quite a different one in that mix too, because it's the shortest ray and then the most drastic angle. And I think that's the one I really see the, because of maybe the gradient in there, but you were talking about how it has a perspective. It has that forced perspective and it really does pull you in. And I love those ones that are a little bit like, whoa, I haven't seen that yet. And that's a great example, you know, in that trend.
Yeah. And you can see they're all new enough kind of trends that everybody kind of brings something different to them. That one that you're mentioning, each one of those elements has some gradient going on in it.
Yeah.
You know,
in a clever way, like they found the light source. Like they're not all the exact same copy of these gradients. Like, oh, the light source is upper left and everything's according. So like that feels good.
Yeah.
Some of the other ones are just solid, you know, with absolutely no gradient going on whatsoever. Two things that I'm going to report on that aren't in part of this report that are just uber dominant right now, and that is pattern and animation. And here's the deal. You know, at the very beginning of this conversation, we started talking a little bit about that period of time, maybe 10 years ago when, and actually it was only 6 years ago, but I'll give you that 10 that you suggested, Nick, was when everybody started dropping back to just pretty much straight sans serif fonts and, kind of dropping their logos and trying to be as Spartan as possible. Yeah. When you think about all that going on, something in the hierarchy of grabbing your damned attention had to happen. And as human beings, and this is, you know, how we see things, we identify color first. Secondly, we identify pattern. Third, we identify shape. So before we see the shape of a logo, when you're driving down the road with your kids and they see that yellow thing up ahead, which is a McDonald's logo, and then they see the rhythm of the two arches, you know, before they see that logo and can read McDonald's, they can tell it's McDonald's because you're picking things up in that order. And this year, because we have really stripped back so much of the logos, so many logos that are just plain black and white, that are just going to live in that kind of condition, but are going to let their surroundings, all that visual vocabulary that hangs with them, take the hierarchy. And you're looking like ESL, the, you know, sports league, the esports group, or DreamHack, or there are so many different entities out there that have adopted both pattern and animation, which really end up filling that world and letting the logo really lay back. It's like the logo is almost not there because that pattern and that animation speaks to what that brand is, as opposed to looking at the logo and going, oh, that's the brand.
Yeah.
Makes a big difference.
That's fascinating to me. How do you know that, Bill? How do you know the order in which we see those attributes? You mentioned shape last.
Sure. And that's actually just from the visual capabilities of, you know, I mean, it's from studies. I wish I could direct you towards a book, but it's just the way that the eye sees and what it picks up in the order that it picks it up as you move closer and closer to something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's just,
but I guess,
you know,
curious, the very first thing is over color. Here than it would be in Europe. Northern Europe.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like, imagine if you would, taking a camera and taking it out of focus, but aiming it at something. Yeah. And as you slowly start to pull it into focus, what do you see? Well, the first thing you see is the color of what you're bringing in, but you don't see the shape. And the next thing that you start to see is pattern or rhythm in there. You know, you might be looking at, let's say, wrought iron, you know, that has, you know, vertical bars in it. But the first thing that you start to see is that there's a vertical breakup of space, and you start to see pattern. And then as you come into focus, then you go, oh, okay, I'm looking at a wrought iron fence, and those are the bars that are on the fence. So it's the same way at a distance. I mean, you know, things slowly come into focus to you. And that's the order in which you see them.
Yeah, recognizing patterns. I mean, that's allowed us to, I mean, you can get into like anthropology here, but like, I know patterns is important because that's allowed us to predict and expect what's coming. So like, that's a very important thing for humanity, right? Like that recognition involves just like a lot of matching and information that's already there, but you can store it in your brain really well. And like, that's what really separates us and our cognitive abilities, like being able to identify patterns, what's happening, what's going to come, and make predictions. Yeah, not a lot of species can.
We're really getting deep, but Jordan's starting to wander into. No, seriously, you're starting to walk. You're starting to wander into visual psychology, which is that, you know, it's not uncommon for us to look at something and go, "Do you see those two kind of eyes in that thing?" Well, again, you know, through evolution, we have been predispositioned to start to pick up, you know, a set of eyes. Because it's either friend or foe, and we need to identify quickly, you know, if we're going to continue to live. And, you know, it's how you start to see faces in a cloud as opposed to seeing a ladder in the clouds.
Yeah,
you know,
The uncanny valley sort of things. I think that kind of stuff is great, though. Like, even for designers to have some, like, you know, if anyone has, like, a little bit of an interest, I get down that wormhole pretty often, but it is helpful to kind of identify these factors when you end up, I mean, all we do is translate things visually, you know? So like those things have a basis where we kind of live.
You know, I'm going to kind of maybe close in this direction, and I am going to come back to Logo Lunch, but I want to make a comment just about our profession in general. And that is that, guys, we live in a very subjective world. We are designers. You pull 12 designers into a room and give them a project, I guarantee they're all going to come back with a different solution. And they all may be genius solutions, but they're going to be different. You pull in 12 accountants. You pull in 12 accountants and ask them to add up a column of numbers. Theoretically, they should all come up with the same answer. Same. That's objective. Our clients generally are objective, and we are subjective. And that's where you have this clash. And you've got to be able to find a way. Michaela, you were asking me, you know, well, how do I know this? I actually got a business degree before I got a design degree. And, you know, as part of design, we've got to be able to communicate to an objective individual, that CFO or CEO or CTO or whatever it is, this information in such a way that they know that we're not just bullshitting them, that they understand when they say, can you show me what the ROI is on this, that we can explain to them, no, I can't guarantee the ROI, but what I can do is I can explain to you in an objective fashion why this works. And, you know, there are so many designers that can design beautiful logos but have absolutely no idea what that's going to do for their client. They just know it's a beautiful logo, and it may not be right, and it may be right. We don't know. But if you objectively know, and if you provide objective information to your client, you can charge so much more for your work because, you know, you can prove the value of it, you know, and that's why they come to you. And I, you know, so I so encourage
that,
you
know, is very
anybody
much
out there
the,
in your audience.
That, but that is very much the consultation component of our position. To me, that was really, really well said, because you have to be able to provide the argument that it, that, for example, any given selection is on trend, and or pull examples with these big top leading notable brands for them to visually see themselves that you're not bullshitting them. Have you guys had to do that? Have you guys had to do that?
I am beyond. It gets better and better every new pitch.
But you know what's interesting is that there's a way to approach that that's defensive, and there's a way to approach that that's
I like to make it like it's like a game changer. Like I'm opening the door to something a room they've never been in. I think that's the way to do it, rather than come off like this is the way. it's more like, let me share a secret with you. And then it makes sense even more. And they're like, whoa.
Man, doesn't it matter? Because everybody wants to fit in so terribly. It's almost a little bit of a knockoff. It's almost a little bit of a, come on, guys. Let's be on edge here. Let's do it for the first time. What do you say?
Mm-hmm.
Does it bother any of you that it seems that you can sell words for twice what you can sell pictures for? You know, if you look at a project, when somebody pulls you in, they're willing to spend twice the money to have you give them an evaluation and a marketing, you know, brief that explains to them, you know, what they need to be doing. They'll pay you half of that.
Yeah.
For the actual design, you know.
That's
but it's
so
the front,
well said.
It's front end of that they find the value. And, you know, as designers, you've got to learn that if you're going to make it, you've got to provide both ends of that hot dog. You can't just provide one.
Totally correct. And I think you're right. And we've pushed this to our listeners all the time because we're all still struggling on this. You add that component to your design work and become that person that can hopefully be both to them, you know? Because as a teacher too, I've told my students 100 times, design is the end of the strategy. The strategy, the words, the content has to come first, and then everything else will support it.
Yep.
But we're, as designers, I feel it's easier for us to bring marketing in as a one-person show as a marketing person would be to bring in design.
Yeah.
100%. Oh, absolutely. You are so correct.
You know, so we have to take advantage of that. And it makes a huge difference. And I share those little presentations where, and, you know, the three of us have shared our documents as well. And we know what we do. And we can learn from each other and be like, whoa, there's a cool little additive that I'm not doing right now, and vice versa. And they get better and richer each time. And I feel like if the person doesn't get it, then maybe it's not the right client. If they can't appreciate that, and I've done everything I can to explain that, maybe it's not the right partner down the road. I love the ones that get it and drool over that stuff, right? That's the best.
You bet.
Yeah.
That is the best. I love that you brought that up.
Yeah, yeah. And I think you said it, like, the subjective versus objective is dead on. I mean, like, that's the most simple and profoundly best way to say it, right? And I think most freelancers will end up getting that way just because you start to realize, like, I can make a lot more money if I actually know exactly why I'm doing this. You know, inherently it might look cool, but like, if I can actually explain, break it down in an objective way, what success means in terms of like how this will operate within your, you know, set problems, pain points.
Yeah.
That's how you sell it. It's not, you know, this logo is cool. Well, here's it. It isn't trending. It'll make you look hipper. Those things don't really last. And I think most clients with a bigger budget or understanding in the industry,
if you don't get there, you're going to die. You're going to die.
Yeah,
if you don't get there, you just, you know, you're not going to make it. The last thing that I'm going to kind of throw in here is Logo Lounge. No, it's okay.
Please do.
I'm going to plug now. You know, Logo Lounge, for those that don't know Logo Lounge, I'm highly encouraging you to go to logolounge.com. We are really getting ready to do a call for entry for book 13. Holy shit. Lucky 13. We have done 12 books that have been bestsellers in our industry that have just, it is the largest collection of publications on identity design. Yep, you got it. I love it. And just so that those listeners that are fans of you guys know, you've got logos in those books because you're just that good. But
last year was my first entry. It was great.
You got it. So Logo Lounge is a $100 annual subscription, and there are 350,000 plus, I think, logos on Logo Lounge as our members submit them that are highly contextualized. You can hit the button to just look at the good stuff or the medium stuff or everything in the world. You can look at any keyword or industry or the designer or the country or the place where it was done or, you know, the time period that it was done. It is one of the best resources for identity designers. Plus, you can can upload all the logos you want to for that same $100 price. And it probably, you know, if you've got a company that you're working for that is willing to spend a little bit of money on coffee, damn it, go take some of the coffee fund and get a Logo Lounge membership. We'd love to have you and love to see you in there. So
it's worth it.
Cool. It's a resource that I love that you said too, you can look up by specific times, by specific countries, because there is a chance you will have to have that resource of like, I wish there was a database that could tell me what was going on in the 90s and, whatever, right? Like, and
so
that's beautiful.
Yeah. Here's a dirty little secret in there that I know that you guys already know that a lot of people don't recognize. So as opposed to Logo Lounge, just having logos that were actually sold to clients, we learned very early on that everybody wants to see what everybody else has done, sure, whether it sold or not.
Yeah.
And the vast majority of what is on Logo Lounge is
the rejects.
You know, if you presented five logos, you didn't have four losers, you had five logos. And we take them all.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where, that is also a way to protect those designs, because when you upload them, you have a copyright date on that so that you can indicate that this was yours as of that date. So it's not just wasting away in some file somewhere and somebody else comes up with an idea and you go, shit,
great idea.
I should have had that out there.
Yeah. It's also great for cross-referencing too. Like if I have an idea, I'm like, I want to make sure this isn't done. And really, Logo Lounge has been the best place for that.
Yeah.
Especially for anything more simple.
It is.
And there's good, like the fact that you guys put out publication books and like article, like ended up in this dog tag trend and I had two offers in the last couple days from just seeing this, right? So like,
cool. There's little,
it's hilarious, but there's been like, it's not just a database. You guys actually publicize and like put stuff out there in a cool way.
Wonderful.
So it's fun exposure. You get to see your logos kind of in places where they might not have been.
I love the fact that you're in the dog tags.
Yeah, I know.
good thing it was a dog house, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That is so Jordan.
Yeah. That's so Jordan.
And Jordan, I'm going to tell you another little secret here.
Uh-oh.
Is that as I started pulling that trend together, you had a number of little logos that were kind of like that,
mm-hmm,
that fit into that trend.
Yeah.
And as I started pulling my ideal cluster together, I realized, oh, crap. I got three of Jordan's logos in here, so I had to start pulling other people's logos in just to, it was just...
I love
you
the
came
word
that
marks.
Close, man. I'm telling you, you came that close.
You almost did a full swipe of a category.
Yeah,
the Jordan category.
Yeah,
just call it the Wilson. Oh well, Bill.
I love that logo, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Yeah, that was a fun one.
Thanks again, dude, for doing this. I we look forward to it every year.
Oh,
but
this is such a blast.
And thanks for like digging a little deeper in the beginning there, because I think that's the stuff that really is the reason you do this. It's not so much to be like, ooh, what's on trend? Let's work with it. It's how do we learn from what happened? And last year was the ultimate year for that.
It's predicting patterns.
You guys can always reach out to me at bill@gardnerdesign.com. I'm glad to talk to anybody. So it's just that easy.
Love it. Love it.
Great. Thanks again, Bill.
You got it, guys. Bye.
We'll